Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Richard Martin from the Wake Up Call, coming to you all the way from Singapore via broadband, which is nice, but nevertheless, we are waiting for our high-speed broadband to be installed, and we are still waiting, and we've been waiting, and I don't know how much longer. So hopefully the problems we've been having will not continue much longer. We get the fiber optics in here. We should be speeding away. And all should be well. Now, the election results from Greece are in, and the pro-bailout forces have won. But just barely. It's being projected that the pro-bailout New Democracy Party will have about 130 seats in the 300-seat parliament, and PASOK, which is another pro-bailout party, will have about 33 seats. And those two parties have alternated ruling Greece for decades, and it looks like they're going to form a coalition government which will keep Greece in the euro, although PASOK insists it will not join with the New Democracy unless Syriza, the left-wing anti-bailout party, joins itself, and Syriza have said that they will not join. So, as always in Greece, nothing has really changed. Greece is still in a depression. The Greek economy has contracted by close to 25% over the past 4 years. And now they're going to stay on the exact same path that they were on before. Austerity is going to continue to grind away at what remains of the Greek economy, and money is going to continue to fly out of the country at a very rapid pace. Greece is still drowning in debt and completely dependent on outside aid to avoid bankruptcy. Meanwhile, things in Spain and Italy are rapidly getting worse. So where do you find optimism in all that? Right now, the ingredients for a perfect storm are developing in Europe. Government spending is being slashed all across the continent. European Central Bank monetary policy is very tight. New regulations and deteriorating economic conditions are causing major banks to cut back on lending. And there is panic in the air. Well, things are going to get much, much worse. The Greek election results mean that Greece will stay in the euro, at least for now. But that's hardly a reason for Greeks to celebrate. Right now, the unemployment rate in Greece is about 22%. Businesses continue to shut down at a staggering rate, and suicides are spiking. So far this month, about 500 million euros a day have been pulled out of Greek banks. The entire Greek banking system is on the verge of collapse. Meanwhile, the Greek government is still running up more debt. It's being projected that the Greek budget deficit will be about 7% of GDP this year. The Greeks went to the polls and voted for more of the same. Someone once said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, unfortunately, it looks like things are going to continue to get worse in Greece for quite some time. And the rest of Europe is heading into a very bleak economic future as well. At the moment, unemployment in the eurozone is at a record high. Most analysts expect it to go even higher. To say that Spain has an unemployment problem would be a massive understatement. The unemployment rate in Spain is even higher than the unemployment rate in Greece. In fact, unemployment in Spain is the highest it's ever been since the introduction of the euro. The Spanish banking system is a complete and total disaster at this point. The Spanish government has already asked for a 100 billion euro bailout for its banks, but that might not be nearly enough. Spain is facing a housing collapse similar to what the United States went through back in 2008 and 2009. Right now, home prices in Spain are collapsing. Fresh data yesterday shows how desperate the crisis is becoming in Spain. The property crash is accelerating. Housing prices fell at a 12.6% rate in the first quarter of this year, compared to 11.2% the quarter before and 7.4% in the quarter before that. Prices have fallen 26% from their peak. According to a Standard & Poor's report on Thursday, fundamentals point to a further 25% decline. While it may take another 4 years to get a glut of 1 million homes left within the building boom, meanwhile, money is being pulled out of Spanish banks at a very alarming rate. As panic spreads, we're seeing slow-motion bank runs all over Europe. Over the past few months, massive amounts of money have been moved from troubled nations to safe havens such as Switzerland and Germany. Investors are getting very nervous, and yields on Italian and Spanish debt are spiking again. Last week, yields on Spanish debt hit their highest levels since the introduction of the euro. Without massive European Central Bank intervention, the yield on 10-year Spanish bonds will almost certainly blow well past the 7% danger mark. The credit rating agencies are indicating that there is danger ahead. Moody's recently downgraded Spanish debt to just one notch above junk status. Spain is heading down the exact same road that Greece has gone. Ladies and gentlemen, the situation in Europe is very grim. Greece is going to need bailouts for as far as the eye can see. Spain is almost certainly going to need a huge bailout. Italy is almost certainly going to need a huge bailout. Ireland and Portugal look likely they're going to need more money. France is increasingly looking vulnerable, and François Hollande appears to have no real solutions up his sleeve. As I have said so many times before, watch Europe. Every few weeks there are headlines that declare that Europe has been saved, but things just keep getting worse. The governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, said the following a week ago, and I quote, "Our biggest trading partner is tearing itself apart with no obvious solution," end of quote. And that is the truth. There is no obvious solution to the problems in Europe. The politicians could kick the can down the road for a while longer, but in the end, there will be no avoiding the pain that is coming. Well, here's the equation they should be teaching in schools as your everyday introduction to the delights of algebra. Brutal austerity plus toxic levels of government debt plus rising bond yields plus a lack of confidence in the financial system plus banks that are massively overleveraged plus a massive credit crunch equals a financial implosion of historic proportions. We are watching a slow-motion financial train wreck that is absolutely unprecedented happen right in front of our eyes, and the politicians are powerless to stop it. It's going to be a long, hot summer for the European financial system. On election day in Greece, the mood was incredibly somber. Instead of celebrating, most Greeks seemed resigned to a very hard future. as an article in the Daily Telegraph described. The entire nation seems to be grinding to a halt. This is the election that was supposed to decide whether Greece stays in the euro. Yet, as it and Europe face what could be their Katrina moment, the dominant sense here is not of panic or fear or even hope, but of a country in suspended animation, grinding to a halt. The Athens Heart shopping center in the southern suburbs is polished, full of big brands, and almost totally empty of customers. "We've had five sales all day," says Steriani Vlachakou, the assistant in the Champion sportswear store. "It's been getting a lot, lot worse." And it's not only Greece that's doomed. All of Europe is doomed, and when Europe falls, the entire globe is going to feel it. So get ready for the hard times that are coming. The pain is going to be immense. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the wake-up call. This is Monday, the 18th of June, 2012. And here is my information, starting with the ever-beloved toll-free number for you, ladies and gentlemen, at 888-874-4888. Yep, the same number as we've always had and probably always will. Again, 888-874-4888. And it is waiting patiently for you to ring it. And if you don't like making phone calls, you can, of course, always write in to my email. My email address is always open on the show, and it is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM stands for Richard Martin at GFAWD, which stands for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. And finally, my direct line through Sarasota, Florida, the cost of a toll call to you, ladies and gentlemen, just to Florida, comes out at area code 941-441-1682. Again, that's my direct line. You may call it any time during the day or the night. You might be surprised to find me pick up. And the number again, 941-441-1682. And please, ladies and gentlemen, don't hesitate to call. If there's any question that you would rather not air on the show, you'd like to discuss with me, please feel free. Pick up that phone, call me. I'll do my best to help you. All right, so we are now coming dangerously close to the next Richard Martin Meetup Group session in New Brunswick, New Jersey, which will take place next Sunday, the 24th of June at 2 p.m. at the George Street Ale House, the regular venue. That's 378 George Street, New Brunswick, New Jersey. And ladies and gentlemen, please come and pay us a visit. In a few minutes, I will be reading you a fairly lengthy email from Sarita, who used to live in New York, and who, through really the entire process of listening to the wake-up call, from zero to hero, has gone from somebody living in New York to a person who has renewed her life and her every aspect of living and the desire to continue forward by moving and settling in Cuenca in Ecuador. And I will read you what she has to say about moving in. I'm very proud of Sarita. She actually did attend a couple of the meetup groups, and I'm hoping that she got some degree of stimulus from the meetup groups, some incentive, motive to leave. Anyway, she did it, and she as happy as it gets. So we'll be talking a little later in the show about her, but to get that kind of desire and motivation, you may need to do some networking, ladies and gentlemen. And what could be better than the meetup group this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. in New Brunswick? And I would ask you, please, as always, to call Jack to let him know that you're coming. His number is 914-414-6940. That's Jack Chavesta. Again, his number. Please give him a call. Let him know you're coming. This could be a very important moment in your lives, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of people will be talking about this. Jack will have something laid on for you, although I'm not sure what at this moment. He hasn't called in with a particular feature that he is preparing. But anyway, his number again is 914-414-6940. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, it is time for a list of statistics again. We have to keep you in touch with what's going on. So here's the medicine. 45 million Americans, that's one in seven, are on food stamps. One in seven is unemployed or underemployed. The percentage of those out of work, defined as long-term unemployed, is the highest at 42% since the Great Depression. 54% of college graduates younger than 25 are unemployed or underemployed. 47% of Americans receive some form of government assistance. Employment to population ratio for 25 to 54-year-olds is now 75.7%, lower than when the recession so-called ended in June of 2009. There are 7.7 million fewer full-time workers now than before the recession, and 3.3 million more part-time workers. 8 million people have left the labor force since the recession ended, as they say. Adding those back in would put the unemployment rate at 12% instead of 8.2%. The number of unemployed looking for work for at least 27 weeks jumped 310,000 in May, the sharpest increase in a year. Just 14% of high school graduates believe they will have a more successful financial future than their parents. The male unemployment rate for ages 16 to 19 is 27%. For ages 20 to 24, it's 13%. Because of structural problems such as negative home equity, which keeps people from moving for work, and skills erosion from long-term unemployment, UBS economists estimate that the economy's natural unemployment rate has increased from 5.7% before the recession to 8.6% now. This acts as a speed limit on potential economic growth. Between 2007 and 2010, median family net worth fell nearly 40%, while median inflation-adjusted incomes before taxes fell nearly 8%. The economy overall has been in a depression, at least since the beginning of 2008. And just in case you're doubtful about what a depression is, a depression, as per Wikipedia, is, and I quote, considered by some economists to be a rare and extreme form of recession, a depression is characterized by its length, by abnormally large increases in unemployment, falls in the availability of credit, often due to some kind of banking or financial crisis, shrinking output as buyers dry up and suppliers cut back on production and investment, large number of bankruptcies, including sovereign debt defaults, significantly reduced amounts of trade and commerce, especially international, as well as highly volatile relative currency value fluctuations, most often due to devaluations. End of quote. Price deflation, financial crises, and bank failures are also common elements of a depression that are not normally part of a recession. Economic metrics should be based on what the average Joe is experiencing: shrinking buying power and assets contracting in value. GDP is the wrong tool to look at Joe's world. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, let me talk about Columbia professor and Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz, who in his latest book examines the causes of income inequality and offers some remedies. And in between, he reaches some startling conclusions, including that America is, quote, no longer the land of opportunity, and the American dream is a myth. End of quote. Well, while we all know stories of people who've moved up the social stratosphere, Stiglitz says the statistics tell a very different story. In the last 30 years, the share of national income held by the top 1% of Americans has doubled. For the top 0.1%, their share has tripled, according to Stiglitz. Meanwhile, median incomes for average workers in America have stagnated, according to Stiglitz. Quote, even more than income inequality, America has the least equality of opportunity of any of the advanced industrial economies. End of quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any knowledge of the American ethic in comparison with the ethic of other Western countries at the very least, this must come to you as a profound shock. This basically means that the status you're born into, whether rich or poor, is more likely to be the status of your adult life in America versus any other advanced economy, including old Europe. Do you realize what an extraordinary statement that is? That means that the very motive that Europeans had for leaving Europe and going to the United States, that is to say, the expectation of higher and more worthy economic degrees of attainment, made it possible for these people to go to the United States and to leave their countries. The situation has now completely reversed, according to Stiglitz. And, of course, this ties in with what I keep saying to you, ladies and gentlemen. If you are old, it's worth leaving. If you are middle-aged, it's worth leaving. If you are young and starting a family, it's imperative that you consider your options, whether they are best served in the United States or elsewhere, where your possibilities, and more importantly, the possibilities of your children, are best served in terms of the future. For example, just 8% of students at America's elite universities come from households in the bottom 50% of income, according to Stiglitz, even as those universities are, as he puts it, needs blind, meaning admission isn't predicated on your ability to pay. And I quote, there's not much mobility up and down. The chances of someone from the top income bracket who doesn't do very well in school are better than someone from the bottom who does do well in school. End of quote. The children of those at the top of society tend to do better than those at the bottom, thanks in part to better education, healthcare, and nutrition. And this means that the income inequality that slowly emerged over the past 30 years will only widen in the next 10 to 20 years. If the root causes of income inequality go unaddressed, America will truly become a two-class society and look much more like a third world economy, Stiglitz warns. And I quote again, people will live in gated communities with armed guards. It's an ugly picture. There will be political, social, and economic turmoil. End of quote. Hence the book subtitled, How Today's Divided Society Endangers Our Future. This is exactly what I was telling you about when I gave you an example the other day, ladies and gentlemen, of a country that has already been through this, namely South Africa. And I gave you the example of a suburb of Johannesburg, which used to have very rich, wealthy houses with rolling meadows down to the road, and in 2 years turned into a kind of fortress with 10-foot walls surrounding the properties and electrified barbed wire on the top and dog patrols on every corner. Well, Stiglitz does believe that what he calls this quote-unquote nightmare we're slowly marching toward can be avoided, citing Brazil's experience since the early 1990s as an example of a country that has reduced income inequality. And unfortunately, this is where Stiglitz falls down. He's always very, very good at identifying the problem, but when it comes to offering the solutions, somehow a kind of sappy wet rag seems to cover his brain, and he comes out with such a lot of very tendentious commentary. Brazil is known for its sharp ups and downs. It goes up and it collapses down. And frankly, this is what we've seen in Brazil over the last 10 years. We've seen a tremendous progress in Brazil, and unfortunately we've reached the top of that progress, and Brazil is about to careen all the way back down again. And it's very sad, and it's quite unnecessary, but this is the way of Brazil. It's always been like that. I know Brazil well. I have a lot of contacts and people that I know in Brazil, and they all say the same thing. When they're told how wonderful things are, they shake their heads and say, come back in 5 years and tell me what you see again. You know, Stiglitz, among other things, recommends improving education and nutrition for those at the bottom of society and eliminating corporate welfare and other policies which create wealth but not economic growth. For example, he cites the provision in Medicare Part D which forbids the federal government from negotiating prices with the drug companies. Over 10 years, that rule will generate approximately $500 billion for the industry, he estimates, but no tangible benefit for taxpayers or the economy as a whole. Importantly, Stiglitz believes inequality of wealth and opportunity are hurting the overall economy by limiting competition, promoting cronyism, and keeping those at the bottom from reaching their potential. Well, I don't know actually whether I am going to recommend the book. It is a book which many people will enjoy, and depending on your outlook, it will have, especially I think in the second half, value or less value. But again, the book is called The Price of Inequality, and the author is Joseph Stiglitz, who, by the way, was on Bill Maher's show last week. And if you haven't seen it, I'm sure you can get it off the web, and it probably is worth listening to what Stiglitz has to say. He comes on right at the beginning of the show, so if you're not interested in Bill Maher, it shouldn't be hard to just listen to what Stiglitz has to say and then sign off. All right, well, I will... let me just before the break, we have... Dave from Baltimore. I'd like to take Dave, who's been waiting patiently for about 15 minutes. So, Dave, welcome to the show. Apparently, you would like to convince your wife to leave the U.S. She has a government job. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Perhaps my wife, her name is R.C., she has a good government job, and she's reluctant to leave it. She doesn't have enough years to retire, But she makes pretty good money, and the house is almost paid for. Okay, we live in Baltimore in a big townhouse, and the property is selling right now in the neighborhood. And so I'm thinking maybe we can get $350 for the house, and we have some money in the savings account, and we have some other money coming in. You know, I have a death in the family, and something's coming in from that. But you know, if she quits the job, and I'm a retired house painter myself, do we have enough? You know, $350,000 to move down to Central America somewhere, you know, because we listen to the expat files as well, and she's concerned that that's not going to last. And we're 52 right now, by the way.
So how long does she think she will be staying in her job?
Well, I mean, if she goes 3 more years, I think she hits 15 and she's eligible for something, some kind of pension payout or something. But there's also something else too, because she mentioned, you know, she has, you know, the federal government, they give you all these little perks, like, you know, besides pension, 401k, and whatever else she had. And she's concerned that if she leaves, you know, she's not going to get to collect on that. And I'm saying, from all the information that I'm getting from you, that won't even be available anyway.
Well, the 401k she will collect on. I mean, everything that comes into the 401k is due. It's not the same as Social Security. Social Security, you pay in and you have no idea if you'll ever get, you know, paid out. But in 401k, that is your money. And she has an account, and she decides how the money is invested, and that money will stay with her. And if she leaves the job, she can roll that money over immediately the following day, 24 hours later, into an IRA and continue to invest it from there. So she doesn't have to worry about that. 3 years, I mean, you might want to, you know, revisit the situation in 3 years, but, you know, 3 years gives you time in your particular case, though unfortunately not in many other people's cases, but in your case, it would give you the time to go to Latin America, actually to find some property that you might like, maybe even to purchase it and to start going down there from time to time over the next 3 years, and then preparing the nest, as it were, for moving in either in 3 years or, God forbid, if she should lose her job in the meantime, and go at that point. Now, there is something else I think you could do, and that's to sell the house, frankly, Dave. I mean, I think you should sell the house and put it on the market. Baltimore, I don't quite know what, you know, area you're in, but the closer to Washington you are, the more likely you are to be able to get that house off at a fairly realistic price. But either sell it, and if you can't sell it, then maybe rent it out at some point, or at least prepare yourselves for the idea of leaving. I mean, when I talk about people leaving, they don't necessarily have to leave at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, but the time really has come to prepare the terrain, to get ready, to actually do what has to be done. I mean, when my wife and I decided to live in Singapore in 2006, we spent 3 years getting things together, you know, really preparing for this. I mean, we didn't just, you know, like checking out of a hotel and going on to the next place. I mean, we'd given it a lot of thought. We left. And it's just as well we did, because the move was absolutely seamless. There were no dramas of any kind. Nothing really terrible happened. The worst thing that actually did happen was I couldn't sell my car. I absolutely could not sell my car, so we just gave it to her son, and I was glad to be able to do that. I drove it across the country from Miami to Vegas and gave it to him, and we left the country 3 days later, and that was great. I couldn't have been happier, but that was the worst thing that happened. But you can take the steps that you need to do this, and that's exactly what I suggest you do. It sounds to me that you've got some liquidity, you've got an ability to set up a fairly nice life for yourselves in a country which probably is going to cost you, you know, maybe 20% of what it costs. And after the break, I'm going to read Sarita's email to me, and you'll get a chance to see what life is like a little bit further south in Ecuador. But anyway, Dave, thank you for calling in. It's been good to hear from you. And
just, say thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Can I just ask one more question?
It's been really a pleasure. Take care, and good luck, okay, Whatever you do, and keep in touch. Okay. All right, Matt, we're taking a break, and ladies and gentlemen, I'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well,
I just got an email in from Rudy Penzi, who says, "Hi, Richard. What are your views on relocating to Mexico? We just booked a trip to San Miguel de Allende for September to check it out for possible relocation. But this morning we heard about drug violence in another expat destination, Chapala, and the Americans who moved there are getting nervous. What do you think? Love the show, Rudy." Well, Rudy, sadly, I have to rescind. I never actually specifically recommended Mexico, but I had mentioned Mexico as a destination that people were considering. It's probably not a good place to go. Not now, at any rate. I mean, things are really heating up with the violence, and it is a fact. And unfortunately, there's no way around that. I can't pretend things aren't as they are. So, under the circumstances, I think you are advised to look elsewhere. Let's take Sarita's email that she wrote to me over the weekend. And she lives in Ecuador, and she came from New York, and she has taken the trouble to write a fairly lengthy email telling me, and us, in fact, what things have happened since she left. And she went there with her daughter, who lives in Montreal, and who is staying with her on a 90-day pass until she goes back to Montreal at the end of July. And, of course, Sarita has a permanent resident pass, so she can stay and will stay. So those of you who are considering moving, and Ecuador would be a very apt destination. They use the United States dollar, you'll hear more about it. But this is the kind of thing that people talk about, hopefully, when they go to the meetup group once a month in New Jersey. And so this is what you might hope to hear. Here we go. This is Sarita Alitovsky talking to us about her recent relocation to Ecuador. "Dear Richard, it has been exactly 1 month and a half since I left the United States, and I must say that my entire DNA seems to have changed. I have been living in a place where perhaps 50% of the population is under 15 years of age. It is a city where you do not hear sirens from police cars or fire trucks, or where, in fact, there is any noise at all. Children do not cry ever for anything. Parents carry their babies, and as soon as the little ones can, around age one, they walk. You see these little humans walking all over, and I, for one, have to stop and stare. One sees a stroller maybe once a week. It is part of the culture to carry children and constantly give them kisses and hugs. I have been simply amazed to see young women everywhere breastfeeding their babies. It is so beautiful to see that there is a mature attitude towards nature. It is not that infantile gawking at a woman's breastfeeding which you find in our country. While we hear news of violence, anger, rioting in other places, that is simply not at all seen here. There is nothing remotely similar in this society. There must be something in the water which makes the society so calm and peaceful and happy. You see people smiling and talking and in no way stressed out. It is contagious. An interesting thing happened concerning the fact that I opened an account in a bank. When I wrote it out wrong, I tore up the check and eventually threw it into the garbage. Yesterday, I found out that these checks, which are part of the checkbook, must be accounted for if you need to close the account. In fact, they will issue a police report whereby this check will be looked for in other banks to see if it was cashed. So, fortunately, the garbage hadn't been picked up, and I retrieved my check. Now I have them all and under security, since these checks are considered legal instruments and must be treated with much respect. I have become most spoilt to daily having a full organic vegetarian lunch for $2.75. This consists of a fresh fruit juice, a soup, and the main dish, plus dessert. Another wonderful fact is that one can drink the tap water. Isn't that absolutely amazing that there are places where this still can happen? One can't buy a bottle of water for 40 cents, but it's more for when one goes on a long bus or car ride. It's more of a convenience than a necessity. Today, we went to a Madre Tierra festival. There, one of the activities was to see the indigenous people removing their espanto, a bad spirit, with a bunch of herbs which they brushed on the people. I know that the power of belief is strong, and so these people are happy knowing that any bad thing they were experiencing will be cleansed by this activity. Each booth offered to trade their wares with other booths. Some had books, others food, others tapes, and everyone bartered instead of using money. In the local newspaper, which I recently read, there was an article on the front page of how the number of children working has been reduced, and now only 10% of children help their parents out. There is also an article on how the University of Cuenca, which is free, has almost 3,500 spaces for students this year. Students in their junior year take entrance exam, and if they get high scores, can choose 10 careers so that they will get into one of the colleges. One can obtain a medical education in this country completely free. Another area of the paper was devoted to all the various free events for the people of this city of Cuenca. The International Film Festival with 10 films was free. We saw several movies, including the winner, which was from Russia, and the Russian filmmakers were in the audience receiving their $5,000 prizes, plus a trip to the Galapagos. The event of announcing the winners was very much akin to the Oscars in Hollywood. The circus for the kids is free. The theater is free. Most of the cultural events are sponsored by the Ministry of Education and are offered free. So every day people have quality entertainment for which they do not have to pay a cent. Starting on Monday, we will have the Korean Film Festival and the Korean ambassador will attend. On Wednesdays, one can go to the movies at the Millennium Mall for $1.50, and on Tuesdays they have opera or ballet or other such events. This week, because of the Russian film, we missed out on the Russian ballet. These activities are $5. In New York, I dare say this would cost at least $80 for orchestra seats, maybe even more. As you can see, it is a very affordable city where one can have a quality of life that may very well be enviable in the rest of the world. While before I had a calendar for daily events in general, I now have to have a calendar just for cultural events and social activities. This is a city that celebrates life in every way possible. We just finished an entire week of Corpus Christi with fireworks nightly and live music, plus 160 stands selling all sorts of pastries. The entire city was at the park for this event. No one was rowdy. This is a society that doesn't drink or do drugs. Did I mention that the bus is 25 cents and for seniors, 12 cents? There are more positives, such as the perfect weather daily, which is delightful. People are mostly friendly, and we are easily making lots of friends. The apartment I rented is across the street from a bakery, which daily has the most delicious breads and pastries. The commute to downtown is about 3 minutes on a bus, and if I want to go by taxi, it is about a minute for $1.50. We have cable and a satellite dish outside our window, so we get many television shows. And I must say that all the gringos we have met are just as thrilled to be here as I am. We are all excited to belong to the cooperativa called Juventud Ecuatoriana Progresiva, which is like a credit union which makes $550 million a year. Yesterday, I took out the money I had sent to one regular bank and had the experience of seeing the cashier take out all the money in cash and put it in a paper bag while 30 people watched and heard of the transaction. Because of this, we had to wait for a policeman on a motorcycle who escorted my daughter, Leanne, who sat behind him holding the money and him for dear life as he raced between cars. She told the policeman to not hurry, but he did. He took her over to the cooperativa where I was to invest the money. I am getting 9.8% for my $10,000 payable monthly. This cooperativa is federally guaranteed by the Superintendencia de Bancos, where the Banco Central, the main bank of the country, insures accounts up to $30,000. A very interesting and new experience for me. There is another cooperative called Coopera, which pays a bit more, around 11%, but they are not insured. They make $58 million a year on their mainly agricultural products. Most Ecuadorians have their money in these cooperatives. The other regular banks pay a bit less, and we were told it is mainly because they want to keep more of the profits. These cooperatives don't have fancy buildings, but do share with their members so that everyone is happy. The greed that has contributed to such unhappiness elsewhere in many parts of the world has not touched these people. Regards, Sarita. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is very sobering. As far as I'm concerned, you may feel differently, but when I read that, and I know Sarita, and I know that she's telling the truth, it really makes you wonder what kind of a waste of time one is engaged in while trying to fight all these frightful forces of fascism in the United States, when one could have such a well-filled and emotionally profitable life in a place like Cuenca in Ecuador. Anyway, I'm glad and proud to have been able to bring that to you, ladies and gentlemen, and I wish you luck with it. All right. Well, let's take another email, this time from Mike Stachelski, who writes in saying, Richard, as always, thank you for your show. It appears to me that many of your listeners are on the same bandwagon as myself. On many of your shows, callers question things like gold as an investment or preservation of wealth. Others bring up the possibility of a new world order. Others call in about general things like, what do we do now with our money, our houses, our liquid assets, and anything else we've managed to accumulate that has some value to us? And lastly, which probably should have been first and foremost, since it's the precipice of your show, callers want to know about the economies of the U.S. and the world, which, under advice, should result in our exodus from America, since an inevitable doom is near. I must say, I agree with just about everything you speak up on your show, but then again, I'm a follower and one who enjoys a good horror story, which you are in no short supply of. So I listen on intently in the hopes that most of what you say doesn't come true. Unfortunately, my false hopes are soon dismissed when reality sets in and the numbers you iterate so clearly on your show speak for themselves. What I wish you followed more closely is the alternative news, which also seems to be on target with what's happening in the world and which some of us listeners are concerned may quite possibly lead to a new world order or, at the very least, massive chaos throughout the world prior to any effort leading to total control. But wait, are these most powerful people possibly making an obvious effort toward control at this very moment with these so-called wars for humanity or wars on terror? On second thoughts, I don't really want you reading that stuff because I don't want you distracted from what you have such a brilliant aptitude for, economics and finance. You have spoken on a recent show how you've deemed everything that has been happening in the financial and economic markets, except the Japan nuclear accident, as man-made catastrophes that could have possibly been avoided, yet you refuse to believe these afflictions are due to genius as opposed to stupidity. You claim the likes of the decision-makers, i.e. the Ben Bernankes of the world, are all just stupid, yet I'm starting to believe that the majority of them are nothing but well-groomed, bought and paid for marionettes of the elite. You are a brilliant man, Richard, and if I, or should I say we, didn't believe that, you'd have no show, but here we are again listening intently to what you have to say next. I have a very hard time disagreeing with a brilliant mind like yours, but in this case, I must. I am convinced there are other minds as brilliant as yours who are vying for control of the world and everything it has to offer. These situations are not from stupidity, but evil geniuses at work. Some folks like to think the majority of these power players convene on a yearly basis and call themselves the Bilderberg Group. Then others think the conspirators are the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, or some cold-blooded Rome group thingy, or some other skull and crossbones secret society or other group thingy. And others, most notably my brother and I in our younger years, where it was our mother seeking world dominance, or at least total control of the household. But my father viewed that world household dominance issue quite differently. So I guess dominance is in the eyes of the beholder. Bottom line is, I'm beginning to believe, there really are evil people in the world who are trying to control everything. You, me, the rest of your listeners, and all that we worked so hard to attain. The energy, the oil, the beauty, they want it all. Or maybe I'm just paranoid as I slap your hand, Richard, in a high-five gesture via the Internet. These people own the most powerful corporations, the most powerful armies, and the most brilliant minds in the world. Some conspiracy theorists even believe they are looking to reduce the world's population from the current 7 billion down to around 1 billion or even 500 million. Is this what they talk about in the Bilderberg meetings? I don't know. Fortunately, the only two reporters allowed in this year's meeting were the business correspondent and the foreign affairs correspondent for the one and only The Economist, which I'm sure you read on a regular basis. So please continue to do your homework, read The Economist, find out everything and keep us informed about impending doom, because there is nothing like a good horror story, even if this one may come to fruition. Sincerely, your loyal listener, Mike Tachowski. Well, Mike, I am glad that there is just one very simple point here in your email, which I enjoyed and was very grateful to have been able to read out to company present. Look, I don't know any of these people, so I can't prove to you via things they've said to me or anecdotes that I can report to you that they're not evil monsters out to rule the world. But I think there are elements in evidence to show that these people are just really basically doing a job of work that they found themselves led into by usually the elite situation of their education or their background or whatever it may have been. And frankly, they're out of their depth. That's the way I see it. I see it in Europe now with the Greek and the Spanish situation and all the other pigs. I see it in Brazil, where they're letting a wonderful economy that they have built up over the last 10 years slip through their fingers and go right back down to zero. I'm seeing it in Argentina, another fabulously wealthy country, where they're just basically raping it for socialist ends which have no real future. And of course, I'm seeing it in the United States, where the big bullies are getting together and trying to attack the rest of the world in a kind of absurd effort to dominate whatever they're looking to dominate, whether it's oil or Coca-Cola imports, whatever it may be, absurd nonsense which frankly has no future. But you know, when you look at somebody like Ben Bernanke, who in my opinion, and I've read a little bit about him, is a very simple man. I mean, the man has done nothing but teach all his life. He's never had any position of responsibility in business. He really doesn't know that much. He's read a lot of books and he's come up with a lot of theories, but none of them make any sense. None of them have worked. He's had plenty of time to throw out his experiments on the rest of us. They didn't work. The man's he's bereft of ideas, quite frankly. I don't think he's trying to make an effort towards control at this very moment with wars for humanity or wars on terror. Mike, I just don't believe it. It doesn't make sense. Why would they? If they were that brilliant, they'd have better things to do with their lives than try to engage in sort of quixotic efforts to bring down the world. For what purpose? You have to look through these things. You've got to go deep into what is really essential about this and really try to understand what motives an incentive these people would have to create this nonsense. And it's put about by organs which, frankly, should know better. There's something very uplifting to some people about this idea of claiming that everybody is a criminal theorist and basically out to get you yes, some of them are. Of course they are. We've known that the people in the Bush administration, we know their names, we know what they did, we know that these people really are nasty human beings, and I've never shirked from saying that I thought so. And among them, And high on the list, if not at the top of the list, was Alan Greenspan, very different from the current occupant of the chairmanship of the Federal Reserve. But most of them are just ignorant idiots, honestly. That's the only possible conclusion that I can come to. And I do read all this stuff, so I do know what's going on. And I'm aware of what people say, Mike. By the way, there's a book that I wanted to mention to you called Going Deep by Eric Peters, which does in fact deal with this situation in some detail. You might want to get hold of it. It also has a lot to do about leaving the United States. It's recommended on Google. If you put into Google Going Deep and Eric Peters, that should bring up an interesting article for you to read, ladies and gentlemen. I highly recommend it. So there you are, Mike. I've said this before. I've had this conversation before. You're very welcome to pursue the conspiracy line of thinking if you feel that will lead you anywhere. Do let me know if it really does. I mean, if you come up with something specific which isn't what somebody else has written on a blog or in a book or in a newspaper, but something you actually know for a fact, then I'm interested. I'm all ears. But for the rest of it, I'm still waiting to be convinced. That's pretty much about all I can say. But I really am grateful for your email, and I'm glad it was also rather long, somewhat like Sarita's, but I think it made a point that I've wanted to make for some time, which is that those people who really are convinced of the conspiracy theory behind everything have a lot more work to do, in my opinion, to justify their opinions. And in that respect, my opinion is that we've come to the end of another show. So with that in mind, I will bid you a farewell, ladies and gentlemen, till Friday. Have a wonderful week. Richard Martin again, as always, wishing you the best. Until then, take care. Bye-bye now.